Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and it is the week leading up to the Texas State Fair, to the Red River Shootout. It is Texas and Oklahoma coming this weekend on Saturday. And so in honor of that, joining the podcast this week from SB Nation, he is Bomani Jones. Bo, I appreciate you coming to work a little bit early to record a CBSSports.com podcast.
Yeah, it's not every day that I get to engage in your actual real life day job.
That's after this, we'll be linking up with our good friend Hayes Permar from David Glenn Show and ACCSports.com, and we'll sit down to making episode 54.
54.
We're
getting up there, right?
Yeah. So be sure to go over to SB Nation and the YouTube channel, and SBN Bomani and Jones is where you can find all 54 of those wonderful episodes. But on to Texas and Oklahoma. You said just a second ago it's going to be a stressful Saturday for you, huh?
Yeah, no. I'd say Texas Oklahoma is one of the few, like, it might be the only just set in stone sporting event that I'm like, okay, I will be sure that this is what I'm doing. This is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So that'll be 3 hours of my day. I don't watch the game with people. I just watch it, you know. Nobody needs to know what I do or say. None of those things need to come up.
Are you going to be on Twitter talking about it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see. Last year was my alma mater's homecoming, so I looked and saw the score was completely out of hand and got like fully immersed in have fun at homecoming mode because it was not. There was no reason to do anything else.
No, it's this will be, and for Texas, you are a Texas fan,
yeah, you know,
for the listeners, and this is a big year for them. Before we get to this game, sort of what brought you to being a Texas Longhorns football fan? Because it goes pretty far back, right?
Yeah, I just grew up in Texas.
Yeah,
you know, like, there's no magical story. Like,
yeah,
I wish there was something affectionate, you know, something I could give people that'd be like, oh wow, nope, just grew up in Texas. This is the one you got to pay. I'm not from there, which is interesting because all the pro sports teams that I've ever rooted for, none of them are Houston based. I grew up in Houston. None of them are, but I don't have any like University of Georgia attachment because that's where I was born, in Atlanta. I don't have any of that for whatever reason. This is just kind of how it worked out.
And of all that, the Longhorns are what you've stuck by.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right?
Yeah.
And plus, they were in 10 games a year. There's no real reason to turn around. You know, you win 10 games a year, this isn't the worst thing to hold on to.
What is, looking back on all the, if this is the one game that you set aside, what is your favorite Red River Shootout memory?
Well, I don't even know if it's like favorite memory is tricky to put. The best game of this series, at least I would argue in the last 20 years, is probably that 08 game. Sam Bradford, Cole McCoy, I think it was the 10-point game at the end. That was as good a game as you got that year from anyone on a team that probably should have made the national championship game. When you go, that's the year Oklahoma made it, even though they lost to Texas. That was as good a game as it's been, because this is really like most rivalries where you have these swings that go 2, 3, 4 years, one team's going to win. 2, 3, 4 years is going to go the other way. There aren't many that really bounce back and forth.
Right.
And that's the way this one had gone for a pretty significant stretch. Oklahoma winning those 5 or 6 in a row at the beginning of the 21st century. That was one of the rare times where you went into the game and said, I really have no idea who's going to win this on either side. And the game actually delivered in that way.
Yeah, and that game in particular was sort of the beginning. I would argue we've really seen the swing back after that game at back Oklahoma's way.
Yeah, that was it. Well, coming up to that, so Texas had won in 05 and 06. After losing from 2000 to 2004, Texas had won in 05 and 06. 07, that team went in there. Texas, absolutely, there was no way they were going to win that game. And it actually turned out to be a lot closer than I think anybody expected it to be. But that 08 team was the first really good to great team that they'd had since the national championship team in 05. And Oklahoma's team looked every bit as good that year. So you had a game that you really went into with the expectation that it could be something great, and it actually did deliver. Like, most rivalries aren't Florida State-Miami of the 90s, where you
right.
got a great game every year. It doesn't work that way in most of these.
What is one of your least favorite Red River Shootout
games? Oh, the Adrian Peterson triathlon in 2004. That's it. I mean, I think most people, when you look at this series, at least in recent history, most people would point to with the 63-14 game in 2000 and the 65-13 game in 2003. And, you know, nothing's really entertaining about watching your team lose by 50 points. Getting 50 pieced is a problem. However, worse is watching Adrian Peterson after he had said, I went to Oklahoma because I wanted to go to a place where I had a chance to win national championships, just beat them up for 214 yards. They only won 12-0, and that was as demoralizing, if not more.
Yeah, well, and that was still a game. I mean, you know, you looked at it on paper, and Texas was still in the game. But if you were watching the game at the time,
it was over.
You would have no idea. It was a 12-point game.
You got to remember, after that game, that was when the Vince Young needs to be a tight end movement really, really took hold. That game almost it changed the direction of the program. Really, there's the bogus pass interference call they got against Kansas that year that kept them in the BCS running. But it was after that game that you had infamously Vince Young saying, "Look, you got to trust me," because he wanted to say he went 4-for-15 in that game or something. He was absolutely awful. And then from there, they didn't lose another game until 2006. So you know,
yeah.
And that was the only game they lost that year.
And that sort of streak that started there ended with
national championship.
The Heisman being moved to Vince's house.
That was right. That was two Rose Bowls, a national championship, and you know, of course, everyone can do revisionist things about whatever team of if this had not happened or whatever. But if Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt in that Kansas State game, there's a distinct possibility that 06 team, they lost that game to Ohio State, but they run through the rest of that season without losing a game. I mean, that was a really strong run. And it started after the Adrian Peterson triathlon.
That's right. For the first time, I think it's only happened like twice in the last 15 years, both of these teams are coming in to this game with a conference loss already. You've got, of course, the Kansas State loss for Oklahoma, and then last week, Texas is to West Virginia. Is the power of the rivalry so strong that even without both these teams coming in undefeated, it still feels like the Big 12 is on the line?
Oh, well, here it feels more so, I think, for both coaches, not so much like the Big 12 is on the line, but like I think you might want to win this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that, and I can't think of the last time that you went into this game with that real feeling that somebody needs to win this game. You could have said that about Texas maybe 04, and in 05 you could have said it, but in 05 they obviously had the better team. But it's in the Stoops-Mac back-and-forth era, this is the first time in a long time that somebody needed to win it. And you could really make the argument that both of them do. It's very rare that you have a time that both Texas and Oklahoma feel like they're down. It's almost kind of a zero sum. Like, they're both typically going to be up, but both feel like they're down. Texas feels like it's rising right now.
Right.
Oklahoma feels like it's falling. Not that they're just having one of these years that was thrown in. So, like, Oklahoma has all the conference champions, has so many more conference championships during the Stoops era than Mac. I think Mac has two. I want to say Stoops has seven. It's a gigantic difference. But you would have thrown in the middle these 7-5 years for Oklahoma. Texas never had the 7-5 years. So Oklahoma would have a year where they'd fall for whatever reason, whether it be the Bomar suspension or anything else, right? You know, they'd fall for a year, but then they'd be right back to where they were. It doesn't feel, at least to people I talk to who follow Oklahoma football a little bit more, it doesn't feel like, it feels like something different. That even if they were to win 9 or 10 games this year, they don't feel as if they have the elite talent that they'd had in previous years. And it's hard to argue. When you want to name that, like, name the one standout talent on Oklahoma's roster off the top of your head. I don't really have a name that I can call off for you.
Yeah, no, it's, you would think, at one time, and Mac all week, he's been, you know, pointing at Landry Jones, calling him a Heisman Trophy candidate. We haven't seen anything Heisman Trophy-like out of Landry Jones since Ryan Broyles went down.
Yeah, I guess Mac must not be reading the papers. We're over that. You had the Heisman Trophy candidate down last week. Landry Jones, that's not him. But when you think about the sort of players that Oklahoma has had in the last 10 to 12 years, the Tommy Harris's.
There's no defensive lineman.
Right.
You don't have that dominant defensive lineman on that
team. No, and, you know, Jamarcus McFarland was expected to become that player when they first got him, but he hasn't become that guy. There is no Tommy Harris type of player on this team. There's not a Curtis Lofton on this team. There's not a Derek Strait on this team. You know, they don't have those dynamic players that have made Oklahoma what they were for so long, and that has Oklahoma fans really worried for the first time, I would think, in Stoops' tenure, that where is this going?
And And do Oklahoma fans have a right to be concerned with everything that Stoops has brought, that when you are looking on the field, you're not seeing that same level of talent?
Yeah, I'm one of those people that doesn't care what you brought. Is right. What you're bringing. Ask Gene Chizik about what you brought and how far that'll get you. Stoops, yeah. And what we have to remember about Stoops, when you talk about everything that he's done and everything else, this isn't Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech. This is Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, where you have to say that Bob Stoops is, at best, the third best coach in the history of Oklahoma football.
Right, right.
At best. I guess I can't think of anybody else that would be there, but that's a program that has a Bud Wilkinson, that's had a Barry Switzer. This isn't a guy that they owe everything to. This is the guy right now that coaches Oklahoma football, and you can go get somebody that can do a lot of the things that Bob Stoops has done. And if they feel like the program is not rising, is not going to come back up, that they feel that it's kind of plateaued, then yeah, they've got the right to do that. This football, you could make an argument that outside of the Southeastern Conference, that there is no football program that means more to its fans than Oklahoma. Remember, it's something I'll never forget. I read Switzer's autobiography, and there's a chapter in there that discusses that the big push behind Oklahoma football and making Oklahoma football such a big deal was after the Dust Bowl era, Grapes of Wrath and stuff like that.
Everybody was so depressed?
Yeah, the self-esteem of Oklahomans was so low, and the way that they were perceived by the nation was molded by John Steinbeck. So they needed something to raise the morale of the people of the state of Oklahoma, and the decision was to do that through Oklahoma Sooners football. These are the stakes.
Right.
And so if they think that Bob Stoops is plateaued, yeah, something's going to happen.
Yeah. What's on the other sideline, like we said, Texas, it is a little more on the rise, and this is all about the rebuilding, re-imaging, reshaping of Texas football as we know it. We've talked a little bit about it, but you know, when you're going to go with the power run game and the strong defense, you know, that's sort of Max said he's trying to base it around this SEC model, but the defense has given up some points.
They have.
Is that just Big 12, or do you think the defense has not performed to where we maybe held them before the season?
Well, the problem was they were also giving up points to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
So
late garbage time points.
Yeah, but if you watch that game, they are susceptible to big plays, and they've been susceptible to big plays all year, and they're susceptible to big plays last year. There's so much talent on that defense, it is ridiculous. Like, if you want to talk about those standout talented players that I have trouble reaching off the top of my head to name for Oklahoma, it's not that hard with Texas defense. Jackson Jeffcoat comes quick. Alex Okafor comes quick. Jordan Hicks comes quick, even though he's been hurt. Vaquero, I mean, those names jump up. It's not hard. It's not hard to come up with those guys. They just don't tackle so well, and they have given up 31, 36, and 45 points in successive weeks. They've got to tackle. West Virginia, though, tackling isn't what did the men. They just got beat. And to be fair, I think West Virginia is going to put 48 on a lot of people.
Right.
I think they are. But the biggest disappointment for Texas, you're right, has absolutely been the defense.
Yeah, and the rush defense is what sort of stood out to me, is because that's one place where Oklahoma State and West Virginia both found success. And you could argue that just is part of, for Manny Diaz, that's just sort of what you have to do. If you're going to run bracket coverage on Stedman Bailey, sit back in a zone, two safeties real high, and leave yourself wide open to get gashed on the ground, you know, that's... it's pick your poison with those two offenses. That's fine. I understand. I'm almost willing to look past it. But here against Oklahoma, you are not dealing with the same threat through the air. Landry Jones is still good, but if they get gashed again on the ground, that's going to be reason for some concern.
That's going to be it. And I think that, you know, the Muschamp to Diaz transition has been interesting, because the idea was that Muschamp was going to be the coach. That's where this was going to go next. They went to Diaz, and there was a drop-off, but it was not terrible. I mean, of course, last year they didn't have the team and the talent necessarily that Muschamp had those first couple of years that he was there, right? Okay. But they had Diaz. What's been disappointing and worrisome is the fact that they can't tackle. And I've heard Max's story on tackling has been, well, now it's hard because from behind you got to worry about horse collar, and from the front you got to worry about hits to the head. Everybody else has to worry about those things too, and they seem to be able to tackle, right? Like, that's not what it is. They just don't tackle. But if they're able to, like, you look at the defense this year, they play the pass really, really, really well. You can't look at, you know, NCAA stats, you can't look at the total pass defense numbers because it's just going to be skewed by style of play.
Right.
And I throw it. Their pass efficiency defense is 5. They punt well. They play the field position game well. They just can't stop anybody from running the ball.
Yeah. And that's and where do you see they've got one loss? And you know, I mentioned before, what does this mean? Great point about the coaches. I think that the loser of this game is quickly out of the Big 12 title race.
It's over.
Yeah,
it's over.
Whoever wins is still absolutely in the fight, because I do not think anyone's going to go undefeated through the Big 12 conference schedule right now. West Virginia's, who knows where they might take their loss, but if you're Texas, you know, they could end up getting two losses, and if you win this game, you know, you're right there as Big 12 champs again.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that two losses is going to win this conference. Like, I agree. It's going to be very difficult for anybody to go through undefeated, but it's hard to believe that two losses is going to win this conference.
You think it'll be one?
I think it'll be one. Now, remember this. If Texas were to lose this game against Oklahoma, there's really only two other games that we're talking about on their schedule, and it's to end. They got TCU at home, and then they go to Kansas State on the 1st of December. The Kansas State game, obviously, is the one that right now looks like the frightening one for them. But if they win, if they beat Oklahoma, it looks like what I thought this team should be this season, which is a 10-win team. And I think they're going to, I still think that they'll ultimately win 10 games. But of course, if they lose this one, that becomes a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. What do you, are you happy? We talked a lot about the defense. On the other side of the ball, David Ash has come a long way since this game last year where he was like 17 for 34. I mean, his awful passing.
He was never supposed to play. Like, right. I mean, he's the sort of guy that you look at and you saw when he was recruited and everything else. The plan was not for him to actually play. Landry Jones was in a similar place when they got him, and it worked out better, I think, than people thought. I'm not sure they ever had it in their minds that Landry Jones was going to be their guy, you know, to quarterback as long as he has. But the plan was never for David Ash to have to take on the responsibility that he has thus far. But guess what? You can make the same argument about Colt McCoy, and that also worked out pretty well. I never for a second thought that David Ash would be as good as he's been this year. I said that he just needed to be pretty good, and they'd win, you know, they'd win the games I thought they should win this year. He's gone well beyond being pretty good. He's been really good, and he's not turning the ball over, and they found a comfortable place for him, and they've got guys with speed outside, and he gets the ball to them down the field. I don't know how much more someone could ask for out of a quarterback for this team than David Ash has provided.
Yeah, in the last two games, the Oklahoma State game and then the West Virginia game, he made some big boy throws. It was like those throws when you've got speed like Goodwin and everybody on the outside, if you can put the ball in the right place, they're going to beat their defender in man coverage. So it's just a matter of sitting back there and making that read. And I think it is a credit just to the way that they've been able to take him. Like, because like you said, it was trial by fire. He was just thrown in when he wasn't supposed to be. And then you look at him now, and it's a big credit to that coaching staff for bringing him all this way.
Well, the other thing, too, is that I feel bad for Gary Gilbert. Now, Gary Gilbert has been awful at SMU also.
Right.
So, I mean, that is of note. Sometimes we just all get it wrong. But when they recruited Gary Gilbert, everything I read was that he was going to be perfect for the system that they were running, and then they switched up to this power game, right? I felt bad for Gary Gilbert in that regard. But given that, when you think about that piece of information, David Ash is a better fit for this offense. And with the running backs they have, I mean, with Brown, Bergeron, and Jonathan Gray, and Jonathan Gray is starting to look like the guy from the recruiting videos.
Yeah,
now,
he's
right?
starting to look like the grainy videos with the good music playing in the background.
You start to hear the rap music, and it, you know, and it's all going again.
Yeah.
I mean, they will be able, if Brian Harsin doesn't get too cute, they'll be able to run the ball, and pound people and make life so much easier for Ash and those guys that they have outside. Like, they're set. They've got what they need. They just got to win the games.
Yeah. What and so do you have them winning this game?
Yeah. Generally speaking, and you know, based on history and the likes, like, I'll never really feel that confident about them about Texas winning this game into it. But I think that they should. Now, that being said, I think we need to be careful. Texas still hasn't beaten anybody of consequence this year. The best win that we're talking about here is against Oklahoma State. That puts them in the exact same boat against Oklahoma. The thing was, we saw Oklahoma look unimpressive against UTEP, but hell, that was the first game of the year. You know, so we are working with and talking about two teams that we really, to this point, still don't know very much about. The one thing I can say, though, Oklahoma's got to hold on to the ball. Texas does hold on to the ball. Oklahoma does not. If Oklahoma turns the ball over, they can't win.
Right. I've got Texas in this one just because I like the fact that they have, even though we don't know a lot about Texas, I think we've learned more about Texas. I think they've been tested a little bit more. I like them for those advantages of experience. What is let's go each side of the ball. What is your key for a Texas victory on offense?
Don't turn the ball over. Yeah. Really. If don't turn the ball over and run it. I mean, if they can run the ball, I mean, I don't care who you're playing against. That's if there's anything axiomatic, I don't care what anybody says about the general, about this is a passing game and everything else, dot, dot, dot. I think Mac Brown has, generally speaking, the right idea. We need to start running the ball again. We need to start pounding people. We are the flagship university in a state that should produce these players that allow us to run the ball. It's always done that over the course of time, so we need to run the ball. And Oklahoma, not so great at stopping the run. And the big thing is, when this goes fourth quarter, and you've got three backs that you can throw out there, and none of them are, shall we say, shrinking violets. They're not all Joe Bergeron, who's just out there to hit you in the chest. But we're not talking about scat backs here. You're not going to see a lot of DJ Monroe.
You don't say change of pace. Before you mention any of these
guys. In fact,
guys.
To the point where I actually kind of wish that they would, because I've been, for the last 3 years and change, the DJ Monroe thing has been really frustrating. Find a way to get them the ball. No, if they don't, it's going to be because they're just running it down your throat.
On the defense?
Defense, can you get pressure on the quarterback? Yeah. And by the way, I said Texas pass efficiency defense was good. That was their offense stat. I was looking at their pass efficiency defense.
David Ash is
balling. Yeah, he's better than I thought. The pass efficiency, I was like, wow, there's no way this pass efficiency defense is fifth in the country. I just want to clear that up before anybody says that I'm crazy. But defensively, for them, if they can get pressure, now you're talking about something. Oklahoma is not that good. It has not been that good this year at protecting Landry Jones. Texas has been pretty decent about getting after the quarterback, and they got the guys to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, give me Okafor with another strip. You know, let him get free and cause some.
They got him on both sides. Yeah. They got him on both sides on the outside. I mean, that's saying a lot.
Backing up a little bit, just before we let you go, what is one thing that's surprised you about the college football, a team or a coach or a conference, just something that you've been pleasantly surprised by in college football this year?
I'm inclined to say West Virginia, and it's got to be West Virginia, and it's because there's no way anybody expected Geno Smith to be this damn good. I mean, like, yeah, even those of us who knew he was good, we saw him put up the 70 last year. This is insane. I've never seen efficiency like this, and part of it goes to Holgorsen, of course, but I can't think of a time that I've seen a guy who has been this precise for this long, even as we move into games against real live competition. You know, even as we talk about teams, you know, he ain't just doing this against Marshall and Savannah State or whichever doormat that they happen to schedule, you know, to play early. They're doing this against real, they did this against a real team.
Yeah.
That, I mean, even if we're talking about, put it like this, it is 70 against Baylor, and you can say Baylor's defense is awful, and they are, but nobody else is about to put 70 up on Baylor. I bet you could write that down right now. Nobody else is going to put 70 up on Baylor. There's something to be said for that. The other thing, though, we talk about, you know, things that I've found to be surprising this year. Hey, man, Notre Dame might, like, win all of these. It sounds crazy. It sounded unlikely at the beginning of the year, but let's be frank here.
Okay.
I don't like a lot of things that Brian Kelly does. I don't, you know, but he's the best coach they've had since Holtz. I don't think that there's any question about that. We talk about Bob Davey, Ty Willingham,
Charlie Weiss.
Hey, don't forget George O'Leary. But you know, he is the best coach that they have had, and the idea that they can win like this, and we know Brian Kelly's an offensive guy, that's what we think of him as, but they haven't given up more than 17 points all year long, and they haven't played, other than Navy, they ain't played a doormat yet. Stanford is reeling. They pulled that game out against Arizona. Man, this is going to be a power football game.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot about Notre Dame in that game against Stanford, because the strength of Notre Dame is that front seven, and really all Stanford can do is run the ball.
Right.
That's it. We're going to see, does Notre Dame have the depth in that front seven, and can they really hold up? Because, look, if they win that game, they're going to a BCS bowl. If they win that game, they're only going to lose two more games. I mean, they only have a chance, I think, at losing two games in the rest of the year. 10 wins, and they'll go to a BCS bowl. But if they win this game against Stanford, I mean,
Southern Cal is the one that I'm looking at, because I think and Bob Diaco, the defensive coordinator, has gotten a lot of credit. That front seven is one of the best in the country, no doubt. Secondary is a little bit weak. Miami got a case of the dropsies in Soldier Field. I think Marquise Lee and Robert Woods matching up against them for four quarters is going to be a tough.
I think they have a better chance of beating USC than they have of beating Oklahoma. Because if you want to talk about testing the secondary, they've seen offenses like USC's, right? Oklahoma and that tempo and the fact that Landry Jones isn't a Heisman candidate, but there ain't that many quarterbacks out there that are better than Landry Jones. We spend a lot of time evaluating Landry Jones in the face of professional projections and stuff like that. As a college quarterback, he's still pretty good.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And they've still got receivers that can test a poor secondary. So let's see how Oklahoma looks this week against Texas. But, I mean, how many times has Oklahoma lost at home in the Stoops era? I believe it is four.
Yeah, it's four after the Kansas State game.
Game. And it's not just that it's four. They play people in that stadium.
It's like 80-4 or something.
And they don't just play scrubs. They don't play Texas there, of course, but they invite people that are of real live teams with real live talent to come in and play, and they beat them. I mean, they've been doing it year after year after year. So if they come in and Notre Dame comes in, there's no guarantee they're walking away with that one. It's so bad. Not just have they lost four. They lost to TCU, and that was the year, the 05, after the Bomar's first game. In Bomar's freshman year. They lost that game in 05. Then after that, they lost that Texas Tech game.
Kansas State, and I don't remember.
That's the thing, the fourth one. And I remember, if you gave me enough time, I could sit here and think about it because it was embarrassing. It was one that they absolutely should not have lost. But you're not just walking in there beating Oklahoma. And you better believe that game is going to be at night, too. They're going to be drunk. They're going to be real drunk.
That's good. Good home field advantage for the Sooners at night in that stadium.
And everything. And now it's torturing me if I don't mess around and remember who it is that they lost that fourth game to at home. We're not cutting this podcast. I'm looking at it on the internet, but we ain't cutting this podcast until I get it straight and everybody recognizes that I realize who that other loss was to. And it's not that BYU game because that was at the Cowboys Stadium.
Right. Yeah, it's the key is not the home games or games that are determined home games.
Yeah.
It's Norman.
Exactly. And Norman, Oklahoma. It was at TC. Oh, Oklahoma State in 01, Les Miles.
I didn't have to
look at it. I got it off the top of my head. They lost Oklahoma State in 01 and 02.
Was Holgorsen on that staff?
Possibly.
He's moved around anyway. Anyway, Bomani Jones, you can follow him on Twitter at Bomani_Jones, SB Nation. Bomani and Jones is the webisode.
YouTube.com/SB. And you know what? Let's just take him to the SB Nation page. That's easier.
Okay.
YouTube.com/SB Nation. Click Bomani and Jones, then subscribe.
Yeah, just get there, subscribe, review. Just make sure that you you leave comments.
Yep. Your esteemed host, Chip Patterson, on this is one of the brains behind it and producers of the program. And there's no way that I could get it done without Chip and Hayes. So people ask me all the time, hey, man, who the white guys in your videos? I'm like, basically, all I do is talk and they do all the work. Well, it's a little more than that.
He does a little more. and we're going to move on to getting to episode 54 now. So thank you so much for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Be sure to tune in the rest of the week. We got a Dodcast and the Weekend Picks panel later in the week. And remember, Red River Shootout, noon Eastern time, 11 locally at the Texas State Fair and the Cotton Bowl, Texas and Oklahoma. Thanks so much for tuning in.